Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Satsang with G. This particular episode is going to be very interesting. It's called What If That Thought Never Occurred to You? And I do want to say a special shout-out hello to all the people from the Sri and Kira Show who have decided to hang on for a bit longer and check this out. I'm very, very delighted to have you. It's, they're a great couple of souls, and to have their audience want to hang around for a little bit and listen to me is really quite a privilege, quite an honor. So, again, thank you all for being here. It seems that YouTube comes and goes. So, if I come and go on YouTube, I mean, there's really nothing I can do. We are broadcasting. Those of you on BBS Radio, hello and welcome. I've actually been on a couple minutes before with YouTube and Facebook. And just so delighted to be having this show. I think this is show number 5 now. We're actually getting it down. We're pretty good at it. Happens pretty smoothly. By the way, if you do have a question that you'd like to talk to me about, that you'd like to ask about any subject really related to your personal growth, your spiritual growth, anything from, you know, how to have more stuff in your life to, you know, how do you realize the self? And everything in between. I'm really open to whatever it is that's on your heart that may be causing you some kind of a burden or some kind of any kind of distress, because, you know, we're here to alleviate suffering. That's why we're here. So the number, if you're in the U.S. or Canada, it's 888-627-6008. Unfortunately, we don't have any international numbers as of yet, but by all means, on Facebook and on YouTube, there are chats going on, so you can just type in your question, and I'll be happy to get to it. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things I love to do most, if people noticed. I mean, sometimes I'm actually making myself be very diligent about keeping this to the 55 minutes that is allotted me on the radio, because it's a radio program. They have to have a schedule. I normally go for hours. So hello to Marcel and to David and Amy and Lisbeth and Tyler, people from all over the world. This is really really an amazing phenomenon. Well, I called the episode tonight, What If That Thought Never Occurred to You? And I designed this exercise, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago. It just really kind of occurred to me. And let's just do it for a second. And then I'll explain to you what it's about. Maybe I won't have to. It'll become self-evident. But just, I want you to pick something in your life that's distressful, something that's bugging you right now. You know, something, maybe it's something you want, you've never been able to get, you know, a problem at work, a problem with your kids. Just anything at all that is causing you the least bit of distress. And then I want you to bring it to mind, and all the thoughts that go with it, you know, because first and foremost, it's a feeling, right? It's a feeling that takes place in the body, in the emotions, and then we have all sorts of ideas about it, like well, what's going to happen, you know? Let's say it's a big one for people right now. Let's say you're a little short on money, right? You don't really have enough money, or at least not as much as you want. So just actually go to the feeling of it. Just look very objectively at the circumstances. And the circumstances is you have a certain amount of money, right? Now, if the thought, I don't have enough money, never occurred to you, if the thought just never occurred to you, how different would that whole picture be? Just consider it. Just play along with me here for a second. If that thought never occurred to you, I don't have enough money, would you have enough money? You know, maybe you got a relationship that's on the rocks, right? Maybe it's struggling. And just think again about the feeling of that. And there's just, you know, there's two people, there are some differences. And if the thought, my relationship is in trouble, never occurred to you, It just never appeared on the horizon. No interpretation of your experience whatsoever. Would it be in trouble? Or would it just be having an experience? You can try this exercise out on absolutely everything. And the reason it's important, and it's one of the really the key ingredients to what I teach in inner reconciliation, is there's our circumstances, there's the things that are happening. Now, you point at this is how much money is in my bank account. That's just a fact. Everything after that is a conditioned pattern of the mind that is telling a story about it. And notice, without that thought, without the story, there's no suffering in it. All suffering is in our interpretation of events. There is no suffering in an event. Now, that sounds so strange to people. It sounds so very strange to people. Of course it is. I don't have enough money, but there's just the reality of the money you have, and then there's the thoughts about it, which are actually causing you distress, which are actually causing you suffering. If you can grasp this even a little bit, you have literally stepped into a completely different world. Now, what happens is that when we're, it's really the way the mind works, it's simply the way the whole mechanism works, that we very naturally have experiences, and because the experience has certain experiences have certain impact on us, we develop a story and an expectation of what that circumstance is to mean. And our interpretation, our response, the storytelling about the circumstances happens so instantaneously that we forget that at one time it wasn't there at all. There was no story. When you were little, you simply didn't have these stories. And so things would just come and go. You know, you'd hurt your finger, you'd cry, be very, very real, very authentic, but then it'd be okay, and you'd be off playing, you'd completely forget about it. You wouldn't be having this idea as, oh, I hurt my finger, and I was out there playing with my truck. I really got to watch the way I play the truck. Maybe we should sue the company that made the toy because the edges are too... I mean, they don't think about that in the slightest. You didn't think about that in the slightest. So the interpretation you have, the story you have about the things that happen in your life, have all been added later. And that story is what determines the level of suffering or the level of happiness you have in your life. I'm going to say this again and reiterate it. There is no suffering in life. All suffering is in the mind and its interpretation of the events. And somebody just, Tyler just quoted... thank you for that, Tyler, because I've quoted Sailor Bob's, a pretty well-known spiritual teacher. His quote says, "What's wrong with right now if you don't think about it?" It is just a brilliant, brilliant quote. And it really captures the whole thing. There's our experience, and then there's our interpretation of the experience. Now, what happens if you simply didn't have that if you didn't have that interpretation, or you had a different one? You know, some people can, you know, cut their finger and take the day off work. You know, others will break their arm and be in work the same day. I mean, if there was something inherent in circumstances that said this is a terrible circumstance, we would all react in exactly the same way. But we don't. You know, there are people who literally have billions and billions of dollars in cash and assets, and they don't think they have enough. I've personally known a couple of people who are very, very, very wealthy. One guy had he had some business, stroke of luck, he sold the business like $70 million. He was unsatisfied. He wanted $200 million. And in the process, he ended up losing all 70 million of it. It was a stroke of luck that he made the 70 million. It wasn't his brilliance, which he kind of, that was his story. And he was just putting money everywhere and none of it worked. But that's neither here nor there. The point is that now most people I know with 70 million bucks in the bank would go, I'm done. I'll live off the interest of the rest of my life, and my kids will, and their kids will. You know, we're done. But somebody else, this same circumstance, interprets that that's not enough. I need to be a billionaire. I need to go to the next level. And even people who have so much money, we're talking about, you know, 80 billion, 100 billion. It's not enough. They want more. So it has nothing to do with circumstances. Imagine some, you know, family in Pakistan or something that's living on, you know, $3 a day, and there's 8 of them living in one room. They don't feel poor. Some might, but it's only what you're exposed to. I read a study about happiness that was done by the UN. Oh, this was an older one. It was probably about 10 years ago. And the happiest country on earth, by the standards that they measured at that point, was Bangladesh, the poorest country on earth. It's just, it's all a matter of what your expectation, it's all a matter of how you interpret your circumstances. The U.S., which was the wealthiest, was like 58th behind Hungary and Poland, which, you know, 10, 15 years ago were, you know, much worse than they were now, and they are now. So, so it's all in your story. Which is why an exercise like this is so powerful. It can be used so powerfully. What if the thought had just never occurred to you? You thought, gee, I'm too fat. And you look in the mirror and you see your body. But if the thought never occurred to you, I'm too fat, would you be too fat? No, you wouldn't. You literally would not be, because it isn't an actual state for somebody else. I understand Marilyn Monroe, you know, one of the sex goddesses of all times, was a size 14, which today is regarded as very fat. You know, over size 8. Ooh, that's a punch ball. And, you know, I know women are shooting for size 0 and size 2, and the models are even worse, right? Size 14. I mean, what would your life be like if you were living it under a completely different story? Or even better, no story at all. No story at all. Can you imagine your life where you are just seeing things as they are? Now, here's the important news. Here's the really big news. All of this was added later. All of the story you've got is the interpretation given to you by your tribe. It is the story that has been passed down generation to generation, these ideas and these thoughts. And they become so ingrained in us, so associated with us, that we don't even realize that they're there. As I said, the reaction is so instantaneous, we think that the event and our interpretation of the event are in fact the same thing. We don't realize they are two different things. And to grasp that means, first off, you start looking for the gap. There is a gap. There is a tiny microsecond in between when an event occurs and the story starts. That micro gap can get really, really big if you start to pay attention to it. Matter of fact, that's what meditation is about. Meditation is being in that a state of just allowing things to be as they are, which then you can watch the story happen, but you don't chase it. You don't follow it. You don't say it's true. You don't say it's false. You don't try to fix it. You don't try to reinterpret it. You don't try to reframe it. You just simply become aware of it. And the end result is you begin to literally see clearly something happened, and immediately my interpretation of that thing followed. And now that gap starts to widen. And you begin to see that the interpretation is a habit, not the truth. And that that habit has been what has been causing all the suffering. Because in that gap, there's no suffering. There's no pain. There's no difficulty. Are you following this? This is so liberating to see. And it's simply been a mistake that we've made by assuming that our interpretation of an event was the reality of the event, our perception being the real thing. Let's consider something really interesting like our idea of the world, right? What's your story about the world? Now, is your world the same as mine? You know, I'm sitting here in New York. I'm talking on this microphone right now. I mean, you could be in Australia. You could be in Canada. You've had a completely different life. You could be a bit different gender, a different race. English might not be your first language. Your entire life has been different. You're seeing the world through very different eyes. Your perception of the world, your story about the world, is not the same as mine. To quote Muji, he says, there's one Earth, there's 8 billion worlds. Pretty powerful, huh? Your world, the world you live in, is your story about the world. You're so convinced that it's the true interpretation that you literally create that experience in your life. Anything believed strongly enough quite literally becomes the experience you have. And there's all sorts of neurology. I could go into all sorts of details as to how it works. You know, some interpret it very metaphysically, you know, law of attraction, all that. Others can interpret it neurologically. But the fact is fact. Our perception of the world is not our direct experience of the world. Our perception is our programming. Our direct experience of the world is reality. And the closer we get to reality, the more we experience the bliss of life. That's all enlightenment is that there's no more story. That's it. That's awakening. It's not mystical, heavens don't part, angels don't sing. Well, sometimes they do. But that's not the point. The point is not to be serenaded by a band of angels. The point is to experience yourself as you actually are. That means no story, pure presence, just being here. A couple of questions have popped up. And remember, if you want to call in and actually speak to me, 888-627-6008. And I got a question here, let's see, Facebook from Alexa. So, hi, GP, not sure you can read this. I can. Question is, how can I reconcile with cruelty to animals? Skinning them alive, people persistently tormenting animals, even in slaughterhouses, isolating them, caging them, neglected conditions, etc., etc. I feel helpless, angry. Even if I did not have the thoughts, the animals are still in pain and physically distressed. Thank you for your help with this. What a great question, and I love the questions that are very, very practical, because to not be entertaining those thoughts is to take you out of suffering. That doesn't mean all the cruelty and stupidity and barbarity going on in the world suddenly is okay with you. That's a big misunderstanding of what it means to awaken. It's like, well, then everything's okay, right? No, it's not. No, it's not. It's just you're no longer suffering. And if you're no longer suffering, you bring a clarity and a wisdom and a capacity to articulate and an ability to... Here's the big one. When you don't have an axe to grind, when you are really clear, when you are not suffering, when you're seeing things as they are, you have the capacity to be an influencer beyond what you could possibly imagine. But believe me, the people who are working in the slaughterhouses and like, they don't see themselves in that way. They have objectified these animals to the point where they just don't see them anymore. They just think of them as objects. They have so cut their hearts off that they cannot empathize with what it is that they're doing any longer. Right? The human mind has the capacity to do that. We do it in war. We do it, you know, we teach people to do this. I mean, if we couldn't do that, wars would be impossible. And the more we awaken to that, the more wars will become impossible because people simply won't be able to do it. You have to go to a really dark place in order to do that. And the same thing is true with animals. And, you know, they just have to, it's a big propaganda game. So the first thing to do is step out of your own suffering. It's one thing to feel pain. You know, as a coach for many, many years, I felt and feel the pain and distress of the people that I work with. Now, if I identified with that and it became my pain, I would be suffering all the time. And this is a problem that a lot of empathics have and a lot of people have had because they don't know how to disidentify with what it is they're experiencing. But when you realize that the experience that's coming to you, you know, you are sensitive to the pain of animals or pain of your clients or that sort of thing, when you're sensitive to that, if there's a high degree of identification and maybe in some moral indignation and judgment, that's going to become your pain and you're going to be almost paralyzed. You're not going to be able to do anything about it. But if that becomes just a nut, you see it clearly. All right, there are people who are absolutely blind to what they're doing. You know, Christ's words come to mind when I see stuff like that. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And that word forgiveness in the original Greek, in which it was first printed or, you know, passed along, the word forgiveness that he used was not pardon, which is our modern definition of it. It means to be found not guilty. Father, find them innocent. They don't know what they're doing. They have literally hardened their hearts. And believe me, if they've done it there, they've done it in other places in their lives. So a certain amount of genuine empathy can open up for you. To stop cruelty, we must see the cruelty. It can only exist when it doesn't look like it. And of course, anything you can do, you know, stop eating meat, stop supporting it. I mean, you know, let it all go. I haven't eaten meat in 25 years. I mean, for that very reason. The story's a little bit long for right now, but it was pretty startling when I actually saw some of this stuff in person. I said, I can't do this anymore. Let me see my little thing here. So I hope that covers it for you. It's so important for us to become clear first. We must alleviate the suffering first. If you alleviate the suffering from you first, you have a place from which you can do really powerful things. And even in a place like that, if you get angry, if you get that righteous indignant, it will have an authority and a power behind it that it wouldn't otherwise, because it would just be reactionary. You're going to speak with authority, and people are going to listen. You'll be able to wake people up, because that's how it's got to happen. If people think we're going to make laws and make it illegal, people are just going to do it anyway, right? Because they just keep doing what they're doing until they see themselves and have a little flash of wisdom that says, oh, I am causing pain to others. And when they start actually feeling the pain that they are inflicting on others, believe me, it will stop. It will stop. But that can only happen when the eyes are open. And so you have to be somebody with their eyes open so that there's a light in the world. There's a model to follow. So thank you. Thank you very much for that, Alexa. I love those kind of questions. Let's see, I got over here. Shanika, namaste. If we are all born with pure consciousness, why do most human beings not realize that? Why is it so difficult? Love from London. Hello. Lovely. We have all been conditioned by our tribe. Right? That's it. That's it in a nutshell. We were all taught to believe, think, and feel certain things. Now, that all happened, and even though that happened, sitting behind it, watching the whole thing, aware of the whole thing, completely there with the whole thing, was the pure consciousness. I mean, the seeing never stopped, consciousness never stopped, but consciousness got conditioned into a particular form and then believed that it was the form. Folks, you are not your conditioning. You know, when I said before, you know, the interpretation of an event, the story is what creates the suffering. there's only really one story, and that's the story of I. The story you have of yourself is the mother of all the other stories. And so the sense of identity got formed and wrapped around what in fact was the conditioning of the nervous system. Now, the nervous system has to be conditioned, right? We have to learn to look both ways before walking into the street, and not running with scissors and not sticking, you know, forks into electrical sockets. There's a lot of conditioning we need, right? We need to learn how to, you know, treat our elders with respect, you know, treat each other with respect. I mean, believe me, I we're going to be in a room full of egos. I'd like them to be in a well-behaved bunch of egos, right? I mean, it's civil, right? The problem isn't that. The problem is that we have come to think that that's who we are, and so we have narrowed consciousness, which is infinite in scope, and we've stuck it into this little container of the person, this sense of being a separate self, this little thing that is, you know, this little shivering me in the middle of this universe. You're not your conditioning. Everything you have, every habit you have, every quirk, all these things that you think are blocking you are not you. They are the learned, conditioned patterns that you have falsely identified with you. And so when a reaction takes place, you go, oh, I did that reaction again. Especially when you get on the personal development path, and even more so on the spiritual path, and now you're trying to be a spiritual person and trying to, you know, be enlightened. Now, all of a sudden, every time you lose your temper, you flog yourself. Oh, this is horrible. I'm never learning anything. I'm not going to get anywhere. It's not you. It's conditioning. And when you realize it's conditioning, you begin to take the energy out of it. It stops getting so much of your attention. It stops being so much of a problem, right? Because it's only your attention that makes it have force and power. If you don't believe in it, it stops having energy. Period. When we realize that it is conditioning that I'm identifying with, then it's like, okay, so I react again. Boom, it's gone. I was feeling really good, and all of a sudden I'm feeling kind of crappy. Okay, I'm reacting to the environment. It's not me. It's what's going on. No judgment, no story, pure experience. I'm experiencing the nervous system reacting to the environment as a crab or whatever. That's just seeing it as it is. Story goes away, no interpretation, no suffering, and the energy just drains out of it. Because, oh no, it's not, now it's another story. Oh, I did that again. Oh, I'm never going to learn all of this. And off you go, you know, the next retreat, the next book, the next thing, thinking the next thing is going to be the magic bullet that's going to make all that stop. No, it's not. As long as there's a body and a mind, conditioning is going to keep going. So, did something disconnect on Facebook? I can't really tell, but I'm good on the radio. Good, fantastic. Let's see. Indus, hi Indus, it's nice to have you with us. You are a great teacher. Thank you. Today is the day to celebrate all gurus and spiritual teachers, or Guru Purmina. Much love. Topic is amazing. Ah, that's right. That's right. I forgot. In India, boy, they have such regard for their spiritual teachers. We in the West could really learn to honor spiritual teachers in that way. Yes, this is Guru Purmina, which is a special day set aside in India just to honor the guru. So I take a moment to honor my guru, Muji, and just all my love and thankfulness for what he's opened up in me. And I hope you all find your Sadguru, the ultimate, the guru that lives within. So thank you. Thank you for that, Indus. Tyler, how can we eliminate the one root belief that causes all other suffering? The belief that I am a separate individual apart from awareness. Very good. How do we eliminate it? Well, first off, Muji makes a beautiful statement. He says that the one who starts the inquiry disappears with the inquiry. Now, for those of you who might not be familiar with non-dual inquiry, just follow me here for a second. I think you're going to find it pretty darn fascinating. The I that wants to, the I that is causing all the suffering is a belief in being a separate person. The belief in being a separate person is what is, it's a belief that was created by the nervous system. There's a part of our nervous system, that's what it does. I call it the storyteller mind. That's what it does, is write, create stories spontaneously and believes them simultaneously. It's a natural part of the human being. You can't do anything about it except to see it for what it is and not be the one believing in it. And the ultimate story that it creates is the story of I. The story of who I am. And this is the story you carry around with you. And some people's stories are very functional, you know, very powerful, and they do great things. Other people's stories are not so, and they're dysfunctional, and they have a hard time. But everybody's got a story. If you go for a job interview, I mean, that's what they want to hear, is your story. Oh, you went to this school, you got this degree, you did all these great things, you've, you know, had some great, good jobs and all that, you're part good, upstanding member of your community, and, you know, active in church work and things like that. Nobody ever asks you, yeah, but who are you? Yeah, but who are you? To become aware of the fact that you can actually see the conditioning. Once you see the conditioning, it becomes very natural to ask yourself, who's seeing it? Who is it that is looking at it? And it's not hard to do, folks. I mean, right now, who's hearing my voice? And the thoughts that you're having about what I'm saying, who's seeing those thoughts? Is it another thought? Thoughts don't see themselves. They're not sentient. They're not self-aware. Who is the self-awareness that is aware of the feelings, that is aware of sensations, that is aware of the thoughts that are going on in your head, as well as all the objects that are appearing in the world around you? Who is that? That's the inquiry that begins to break down who we think we are. Right? Now, it's really important, because who you think you are isn't what you are. Who you are is who you are. That's the truth. It's always been the truth. It isn't changed. You don't become the truth. You don't become the awakened one. You realize that that's who you've been the entire time. The image you've been holding of yourself is not who you are. That has been the most subtle of all the stories, the most subtle reaction. You know, something happens, there's a reaction, and immediately with every reaction, every story, every interpretation that happens, there's the thought, I, isn't there? I don't like this. This happened to me. You know, maybe even tell people about it, and like, oh, I had this horrible time, or it was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me. The sense of I is there the entire time. That sense of I is the thing that needs to be questioned. It needs to be examined. It needs to be looked at very closely to find out, is that really who I am, or is that who I just think I am? And you're going to find out that almost all the time, it's who you think you are. And it results from the fact that we have identified ourselves as our conditioning. We think the conditioned patterns are us. It's that simple. We think because something happens in the environment and I react to it in a certain way, I'm the reactor. I'm the one that's reacting. Oh, I always do that. I wish I could change that. What if you recognize that it wasn't you reacting? You're the one who's aware of the reaction, and you've simply made the mistake of thinking that that reaction was you. It's so subtle, but it's so simple and so obvious when you actually just take a moment and look at it. Otherwise, life is completely and totally habitual. You follow me on this. It's the awareness is what you are. Pure, bodiless, formless, infinite consciousness is what you are. That is the Spirit. The revelation of that is what's called the Holy Spirit. It is pure awareness. We're convinced that we have to be some kind of a form. We have to be some kind of object. And so that object we attach to is the body, which is simply life appearing. And who's aware of that? Oh, I could go on this forever, but I don't want to take all the time here on the non-dual inquiry. I have plenty of videos on it. I do classes on it. I do plenty of stuff on this. It is extremely, extremely important to examine, because the essence of our story, as I started this thing, what if that thought never occurred to you? The essence of the story, the essence of all stories, the mother of all stories is the story of I. It's the thought of I. What do you identify with? When you say the word I, what are you referring to? We say it thousands of times a day. We say, I really don't like that. And then somebody asks, oh, you don't? Who are you? We can't answer. It's funny, isn't it? You know what you like. You know where you are. You know what you look like. You know what clothes. You know all this stuff about you. You know who you're with. You know your car. You know all these things. And then you ask, well, yeah, you know them. Who are you? And we start to come up blank, because we're so used to thinking of ourselves in terms of what we're experiencing and not just, oh, but who am I that actually has that preference? Who am I that actually owns that? Who am I? The one that likes it. We don't do that. We don't ever turn that camera around and go, well, who's this? And I so much encourage you to do that. So much encourage you to do that and find different ways to do it. Obviously, I have videos that you can do, but obviously my favorite is Muji, who's my own guru. And this is what he does all the time, hours at a time, exactly that kind of inquiry. If that's a bit much for you, I have a whole preparation that I call inner reconciliation, which just prepares you to be able to get to that point where you can begin to see the difference. You know, opens up a lot of space within inside. You reconcile with all the different energies within you. And you very naturally come into this place where you're just no longer in conflict with yourself. And when you're no longer in conflict with yourself, you can begin to let things happen, so, which means the reactions are seen and not immediately embodied. So even things like an intense fear, when it comes up, you don't immediately react to the fear, or an intense habit or addiction comes up. You don't immediately grab on, hold it. You have some space and you can actually be there and look at it and feel it. And in that space is where the healing occurs. That's where the sense of identity begins to diminish. And you begin to realize in the heart that you are and always have been that pure awareness that's never been conditioned. The conditioning happened to the body, not to you. Let's see. Marcel, I've been doing transformative work for 10 years now, and although I've had some great success, sometimes there are phases where I feel like there's still much stuff to do, overwhelming. Do you sometimes still experience phases like that? How do you handle it? The great sage Papaji used to always talk about being vigilant. You know, you're just always watching because this stuff's going to pop up. Yes, it doesn't stop. And he was asked, but Papaji, I mean, we're talking about a fully enlightened master sage, right? Do you have to be vigilant? And his response was, to my last breath. What I sense in your question is a very subtle desire to get rid of it. That desire to get rid of it is what's holding it in place. You do not need that. You do not need for it to go away for you to be who you are. Do you understand that? You do not need for any of the circumstance you're in to change in order to realize who you are and to be freed from suffering. That's the only thing there is to do. So when you say there's still so much to do, yes. If you're on the personal development path or one of the spiritual paths that's about always unfolding and refining and getting better and better and that sort of thing, yes, there's always going to be more to do. Because the sense of I is prolific. It's just going to keep creating new versions of itself. But the direct path, the path of Advaita Vedanta, the path of Zen, is boom, right to the center of it. It's never, ever been true. You don't need any more work. You don't need any work at all. You are already the self. You are already the perfect awareness. And now, start from there. Start as the self, not trying to get to the self. And the self, the real you, is simply having an experience of all of this stuff happening. And the conditioning that's happening isn't a problem. Like I said, it's natural. It's what happens. If you don't have that, there is no life. Life is nothing but conditioned energy, energy put into a particular form. If you don't identify with that form, you're free. And you absolutely love the forms then. Then everything can be fine. You know, party, have a good time. You know, go on dates, right? I mean, have a great life. Because the forms are fine. They are no longer binding you. So there's no need to get rid of anything except the I that identifies with it. The one that wants, the one that says, oh, there's so much more to do. What if that thought never occurred to you? Would there be more to do? That question, what if more, that thought never occurred to you, just cuts that sense of I off at the knees. Because without that thought, that I, that false sense of I, doesn't exist. It doesn't stand on its own. It is nothing but a collection of thoughts. There's nothing there that has thoughts. It's only a collection of thoughts. So if the thoughts aren't there, it's not there. The mind does not exist as a thing. It's simply a word we have for thoughts. There is no such thing as mind. There's only conditioned thoughts. And I think we just lost Facebook. Well, I got here 10 minutes. Let me see. Maybe I can reconnect. But let's see. So yes, talking about me, yes, they come up. And sometimes I find myself going, especially like on hold with the phone company or someplace you're trying to get customer service from. It's like, gah! Right? So there it is, right? Okay, great. Now, if I turn that into a story, now all of a sudden, oh, God, I'm not being spiritual. I'm supposed to be, you know, giving satsang and I can't even do all this, right? You turn it into a story. It comes, it goes. Grief will come. Anger will come. Things will come. Right? No story. Nothing to connect to. If there's no Velcro on you, they just pass through. They're just the nervous system responding to the environment the way it was designed to do. And now there's no overhead because the person is gone. Now not only are you free, your whole energy system is free. The body is free. It's not labored down with all this heavy stuff. It's free too. Everything goes free. Because it's all here. It's all for real. It's all part of this beautiful play of consciousness. The only thing that isn't for real is the sense of a person that has been projected on it. It's the story of the snake and the rope. You know, the oasis, everything in the desert is there. The sand, the heat, the sun, you know, the thirst, it's all there. Right, the heat rising from the sand that makes distortions in the air, that makes undulations of the light. That's all there. The only thing that isn't there is the oasis that's been projected on it. All you have to worry about is, oh, that's not really there. The sun really isn't going around the earth. And just now that you know that, as the sun stopped going, you know, did the sun stop going around the earth and now the earth started going around the sun? No, it was simply an illusion of the way we perceive things. Once that's corrected, the appearance to the senses doesn't change. But now we know better. We're wise. We don't fall for the same interpretation again. That's all this is. It's really, really quite simple. So, let's see here. So, we've got like 10 more minutes. I'm going to very quickly connect the phone and see if it... One quick second. I think what happened is the phone ran out of energy. I'm going to see if I plug it back in. If it come back on, maybe do a live thing again real quick. So remember that number to call in New York is 888-627-6008. I actually used to do voiceovers for commercials on TV at one time. Video games. I was actually on the first Doom, if you can believe it. Belzar, the snake people or something. Yeah. this is one from Craig. God, I just love the quality and the quantity of the questions I'm getting. It's too bad it's only an hour. But okay. This one's from Craig. Hello, Craig. I don't recognize that name. Is how I'm feeling manifesting my reality, or does reality just do its own thing regardless? It's a very subtle thing, Craig. You know, there's the school of thought, the law of attraction school of thought, that it's all your energy. And there's how we feel, and more importantly, how we interpret the story we have about experience does shape our experience. Now they say it creates your reality. Well, there's not your reality and my reality. There's only reality, okay? Reality is reality. If that wasn't the case, all of this would be for nothing, right? Truth is the truth. That's the whole point. You know, we're coming to understand truth, which doesn't change. It's absolutely fixed. It is the truth everywhere at all times. And it's outside of time, even. It has nothing to do with time or space. It's beyond all of that. Our experience is created by our beliefs. And so, yes, it is extremely powerful to do things like, you know, meditation or affirmations and visualizations and things like that. They will change your inner state, and that will change your external circumstances. That still doesn't answer the question, who are you? It is not a substitute for the kind of inquiry that discovers who are you behind all of that? Who is it that's experiencing the feelings? Okay, I've changed my feelings now. I have taken over this and I have changed feelings and I've changed my thought. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And now look at it. Go, well, wait a minute. Who did the changing? Obviously, if I'm changing my thoughts, I am something outside of thought. Now, that to me is way more interesting than just changing the thought so I can manifest a different version of reality that I'm experiencing. And it begins to open up the door for a deeper question, something that's way more satisfying to the heart, not how do I get more stuff that I want, but what's the truth? Because, you know, look, if you were to ask a caterpillar how to manifest its perfect life, you know, caterpillar's perfect life, it wants to be, it will say, I want a sea of green leaves as far as the eye can see. I want nothing but green as far as I, no predators, nothing around to bug me. And I want the leaves to be so close together, I never have any fear of falling off the leaf as I go from leaf to leaf to leaf. That would be the visualization. That would be the wealth, the manifestation that the caterpillar would want. But the caterpillar's destiny isn't to be a caterpillar. And so even our deepest feelings about our wants. When I said here, the story of I, the mother of all thoughts, right, is... that sense of I is generating all of the desires that you're trying to manifest. We say, oh, I just have this desire, and we never question the innocence or authenticity of the desire, right? That's kind of the deal in the whole law of attraction thing. They just don't question it, you know? Oh, I have the desire. It's okay. I'm going to get that. Nobody ever says, well, is this real? Is this really what I want? Is this really who I am? Is this desire coming from the highest part of me? Is this coming from the true self? Or is this just the false self, just the ego trying to satisfy itself? It's such a powerful and important question to ask, and it doesn't get asked. The power of manifestation is real. Anything you focus your attention on is going to get amplified. It's going to get bigger. You know, if your thoughts are in line with a particular subject, that thing is going to appear to you. You know, obviously, if you're feeling happy, happier things are going to happen to you than if you're feeling miserable. I mean, and to take the steps to make to pull yourself out of a funk or something is extremely wise. But I'll tell you, if you recognize that the funk you're in is a product of the nervous system, of the conditioning, and not you, pulling yourself out of it is a snap, because you never fall into it in the first place. Jen, are you following? Are you following this? This is very, 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 very powerful. And I am back on Facebook for people who might have lost me. Yeah, we did kind of... But you may not be able to hear me as well, because it's just the internal speaker on the phone. But hopefully you can still hear me. Let's see. Marcel Schmidt. Wow, that's so amazing. Thank you, GP. Thank you so much. You're more than welcome. List minus V. GP, thank you for an amazing lesson. Sorry I've missed the last half hour question. Is it possible to achieve a state where you have shed the cloak of conditioning once and for all? You were never conditioned, okay? You can't shed the cloak. If by that you mean I'm not going to be conditioned anymore, you're seeing yourself as being conditioned, and the freedom you're seeking is outside of the conditioning. Conditioning is life. Without conditioning, there's no life, right? The conditioning of energy makes up the body, makes up the organs, it makes up everything that you're experiencing is the conditioning of energy. So I don't think you want to get rid of that. You know, the warm breeze, you know, your lover's touch. I don't think you want to get rid of that. I don't think you want to throw that away. It's all conditioning. What we want to be free of is thinking we are that conditioning, and we're not the consciousness that is aware of it. That's how you shed the cloak. You shed the identification with the conditioning. For a lot of people, a lot of spiritual practices, the idea is to try to shed the conditioning. So there's a lot of austerities, and you go through, you know, all this training and, you know, sitting in weird positions and doing all this stuff, very, very involved, trying to shed the conditioning. It's not possible. Buddha couldn't do it. Matter of fact, he even abandoned it. He was doing that for 6 years. Didn't wear clothes, didn't bathe, ate a grain of rice a day. I mean, and then you realize this is nonsense. This doesn't work. This doesn't deliver awakening. And that's when he actually started eating, you know, eating food again, and sat down and says, I'm not leaving here until I get it. And a completely different world opened up. So it's not that. It isn't that. Conditioning is happening. It's going on. It's fine. Nothing wrong with it. You know, my voice sounds the way it is because the condition, this is the particular shape of this throat and this mouth. You know, it was born on a certain day, you know, X number of years ago, right? And the shape of your body, the shape of your friends, the shape of everything is a conditioning of energy. Right? That's what form is. What we want to see is that we are more than the form. We are the source of the form. We are not stuck in the form. It's a great deal like, it's like thinking that Da Vinci got into the Mona Lisa and got stuck there, couldn't get out, like he never did anything else, you know? Or music is produced, you know, one song, so that's it. That's all there is to music. It's infinite. You are infinite, infinite potential, which means you're formless. You cannot be identified as anything. And yet everything expresses you. Everything has got your signature on it, your energetic signature on it. So... You just to disidentify with the conditioning. That's it. That's how you shed your identification with it, and then you let the conditioning do what it is, because that's life. And that will just continue to go on forever, and hallelujah. Let's see. Or is that an ideal that is not possible and therefore something my mind perhaps is overthinking? Yeah, well, I got to that one. That one is good. Let's see. Oop, 4:53, we're coming out. I got another question here. I have so many clients that seem to get stuck in the hijack even when they know about it. Yes, I love it. We are not the conditioning. It's not possible to shed the conditioning. It's come from Donna. Yes. Yeah, it is kind of one of the biggest potholes, almost qualifies for a sink or a canyon in modern personal development and modern spirituality. Somehow trying to overcome and reprogram the system. You can do it, right? But if you just don't identify with it, realize you're not the conditioning, first off, all of the energy that's sustaining it has just been drained out of it. It now becomes quite pliable. It becomes very natural in the way it's responding to the environment. We don't want to artificially create reactions to our environment. That's what happened in the first place. That's how we all got constrained, right? We want a system, a nervous system, energy system that is totally free and natural, that's responding organically to what's going on in the world, that isn't hindered any longer by the sense of being a person, self-protection, and all of the things that all the places where it gets stuck. And really, it's only in the deepest non-dual inquiry where that happens. So I've got to wrap it up here now, because let's see. Should affirmations be said aloud for bigger impact? They truly work. Yes, affirmations do work. But I think, as you've been hearing me speak, and if you listen to the repeats, you know that. Make sure you know who's doing the affirmation. And they are. If the affirmations come from the ego, it's going to be more of the same. And you're going to need to see it. It's coming from who you really are. You don't even need to affirm it. It's self-affirming. Thank you all for being here. This is always such an honor to get together with everybody. Happy Guru Purnima, and I will see you all on the next edition of Satsang with G, right at this time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. in Pacific, right here on BBS Radio and other places. Thank you all. I love you all.